Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Isn't that what I just said? What is wrong with you?
Is it the Pelicans? I didn't know it was the Pelicans.
Oh,
I
like,
know nothing
like,
about the Pelicans.
Yes.
I worked during the fucking day, okay?
And so then I'm doing this, and then he touches me, and I swear to God, this is going to sound, this is probably one of those you want to pull out the audio for your promo. He touches me with his voodoo stick.
Until you fancy to make a decision, Scott's stuck twisting in the wind, a pawn in your sick, cruel game of vacation domination. I don't know the fuck the Department of Health is. I think this whole thing's a load of horseshit, Matt.
To do worse than Josh Richard?
Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the One Only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero. Joining me, as always, my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Welcome, PTB Nation, to episode 206 of the Place to Be podcast. We are cranking through season 3 of the show. Hope everyone enjoyed the Listomania earlier in the week for our manager's list. Had a lot of fun doing that. Tonight, a show that pretty much you and I have looked forward to doing for a while, particularly because of the awesome video build-ups to this.
I don't look forward to talking to you at all, so let's not get crazy.
So let's open the vault, because it is Vintage Vault Night. And
Hey, what is going on here?
Nothing, get out of the way. Tonight, on the Place to Be podcast, inside the Vintage Vault... It's all about love in all the wrong places.
Again. WWF St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
I don't know how they keep churning these fucking things out, but God bless them.
That one you could tell they've probably had building up for a long time because the culmination of almost a year and a half, well, maybe almost 2 years, if you really think about fall of 97, it started, almost pretty much culminates here. For tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, on the Place to Be podcast, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. It doesn't happen too often that that a pay-per-view lands on an actual major holiday. We've had, you know, we've had King of the Rings on Father's Day. I think we had a couple of pay-per-views on Mother's Day somewhere down the line.
Yeah, but, in your houses. And plus, obviously Survivor Series on Thanksgiving.
Right, exactly. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, we've had in your house. You're in that kind of mood tonight, I could tell. And tonight will be no fun for you. But yeah, this one hit on Valentine's Day, and it absolutely was perfect. Most of you are probably thinking, why did you just play some song from, you know, when I was in my 30s? But it actually, the video package that goes with it is pure gold. So, all right, let's jump right in. Obviously, the date.
Well, actually, I wanted to ask you first, did this affect your like Valentine's Day at all?
No. I went out with my girlfriend the night before.
I went for lunch at my girlfriend at the time that day, and I remember her dad or parents were out, and they came to pick her up at my house as the pay-per-view was starting. And I remember thinking, wow, what a... They must be thinking, what the frig is this? Is our daughter dating this jackass? They go out for a lunch on Valentine's Day, and then he kicks her out so he can watch a wrestling pay-per-view. But well, it was rare, too, at this time, because I was actually home and able to order it. You know, I was being in college. Right. This was a long weekend. This was happened to be President's Day weekend, so...
Right.
I was home, and I think Adam came over, and we booted her, and we were like, whatever.
So you spent Valentine's Day with Wayne Bloom. That's great.
Oh, yeah. That was worth it for the show.
Yes. So, no, it didn't affect me. I went out the night before. All right. The date, of course, February 14th, 1999. Live from the Pyramid in Memphis, Tennessee. Not the first time, JR, that we've been in the Volunteer State. But the first time we've been in the Music City capital of the world. We've been in Nashville for pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been in – oh, no, maybe we haven't been in Nashville. We've been in Chattanooga
right
for pay-per-view. I don't think we've been in Nashville yet. I think just Chattanooga.
No, and I'll give a quick background. It was built in 1989, opened in 1991, November. Of course, holds about 21,000 for a concert, 2142 for basketball, home for the Memphis Tigers of the NCAA up until 2004, the Memphis Grizzlies through 2004, and the Memphis Pharaohs of the AFL for a few years in the 90s.
It's amazing, though, how much money is pumped into that city because, I mean, that building was only 15 years old, and they ended up building a new one. So
yeah.
It's pretty crazy. Your attendance, rock solid for the Attitude Era, 19,028, so close to a sellout, if not a sellout. Buy rate, awesome, 1.21. And your announcers, Jerry the King Lawler, of course, in his home base, and Michael Cole, as, of course, good old J.R. Jim Ross, not healed yet from the Bills.
And I'll comment quick on Michael Cole because and just also give a plug, of course, if you want to follow along, you can do so at Bigelow34ProBoards.com. You can follow this review. And also, I did a review yesterday, excuse me, of the Raw from the night before this. There was a special Saturday Raw due to the dog show on February 13th, 99, from Toronto Sky Dome. And listening to that and then this show as well, I feel like Cole started to turn the corner a little bit. I thought he was pretty good on that Raw. You know, not Jim Ross level, obviously, but I thought he had really improved since, like, rock bottom when he was just brutal. And, you know, the Rumble, he was okay, and I feel like here was probably his best outing so far as pay-per-views go. So he's at least learning. He's getting better. The work with Double K is paying off.
Yes, and I think the constant kind of practice and the Raws helped because the Raws were really good. So it wasn't like he was working with nothing. I mean, he was working with good material. So yeah, he definitely started to settle in a little bit. I mean, it would still take him probably another year, maybe a little less than that, to really settle in and be manageable. I don't think he would be top of the line probably till like 2002 and 2003, but he's much better even now than he was at rock bottom. So even in this short span of a couple of months, he's definitely not as unlistenable as he was in the beginning. All right, we have a dark match and two heat matches. I remember heat being a pretty hot show that night, obviously pumping up this event. What were our dark matches and heat matches, JR?
Too much still lingering around, Scott Taylor and Brian Christopher, and they defeated the Hardy Boys. We haven't talked about them yet. We tease it. We're coming soon. Sunday Night Heat, Big Viscera, of course, that is the new name of Mabel, who was kidnapped by The Undertaker last we saw him, and he was converted over to being part of the Ministry of Darkness, given a new name, Viscera, defeats Test, the man who kills people, not guns. And Billy Gunn, speaking of guns, defeated Tiger Ali Singh. I'm sorry, that went to a no contest. Billy Gunn and Tiger Ali Singh, no contest.
Kind of an odd match. I remember saying, he's on the pay-per-view, and we'll tell you what Billy Gunn's doing on the show in a moment. It was kind of odd that he was doing double duty.
Usually stuff like that would just lead to an angle.
That's usually what it was. That's what made Heat great. Yeah, that's what made Heat great. And Heat, pretty much, almost all the Heats throughout the first 9 months of 99 were really important. By 2000, it became more of a goofy, when they switched networks. Was it 2000 when they switched? When they switched networks?
To Heat? To MTV?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 2000.
It was 2000. You had your boy Scribble there and a lot of the jazz. We'll get to that. All right, let's dive in. Our opener is a guy who JR and I are still perplexed as how he's still with the company. And that is Go Dust. Yes.
MTV picked up Heat on October 1st, 2000 through March 30th, 2003.
Wow. I remember Heat going on that long.
Well, it actually lasted till September 05 and That's went right. back to Spike TV and then on Dirty.com through May of 08. So 10
wow,
years.
Wow, that's right. Wow, I forgot it went to the website. Wow. Okay, so Goldust is taking on, I believe we've talked about this guy, so we don't have to give his total background. I know we mentioned him briefly at the Rumble. And that is, he has a different name in this match. We knew him from the Rumble as the Blue Meanie, but in this match he's Blue Dust.
Yes. And this was interesting and disturbing all at once. And
yes, this was just this whole package of storyline was just so Russo-esque.
But I liked it because in watching that Raw from the night before, and I'm going to reference this a lot, obviously it's fresh in my head. So Goldust wrestled a squash, well, it's supposed to be a squash against Gilbert, who was 0-2 at the time. Blue Meanie shows up on the Titantron, and he's playing some really wicked mind games with Goldust. He's naked on a couch with a blonde wig on, wrapped in grapevines. Basically aping what Goldust did back in 96, remember when he was messing with Ahmed Johnson. So, he talks shit a little bit about him and taunts him a little. And Goldust gets distracted. Gilbert sneaks up from behind, rolls him up, and actually picks up the win. So Goldust beats him up after the bell, and then the lights go out. A blue spotlight comes on, and then the lights go out again. And when they come back on, Goldust is doused in blue paint, of course, mocking the bloodbath that the Brood had been giving. This is a blue bath. So I like this a lot. I thought Meanie was really getting in Goldust's head. He was really messing with him. And I kind of liked all the callbacks to the stuff that Goldust used to do to mess with people. So, a unique feud. I thought it was interesting enough, and I was kind of digging it.
It was very, yeah, it fit the tone of the show and very Russo-esque. Incidentally, the girl involved in this whole mess, and we talk more about her in another match later on in the show, is Ryan Shamrock. Yes, that Shamrock. On camera, she was Ken's sister. I'm trying to remember, we referenced this at the Rumble, maybe not.
Yeah, we did
reference it at the Rumble. But just to let you know who she is, the reason I want to reference this, JR, is this is a perfect example of the tone of the company is changing. Ryan Shamrock is Alicia Webb. That's her real name.
Mm-hmm.
The WWF found her in Houston as a stripper. Now,
scouter and bring her back?
Exactly. Well, of course, yeah. I mean, he came in and they just flocked and he had a talent show, audition right there in the middle of the place. But, by the way, that's where he is today, but we're not going to get into that. The whole thing was, this whole thing with Kenny's sister and everything. But my point is, if this was 1988 and they were looking for, a new, young, fresh girl to be on camera, they would have found her, talent scouts or, actress, something like that. But in the Attitude Era, we'll just find some stripper. This just seems the way the Attitude Era was. We're just going to find some stripper. Well, she's hot. Let's put her in a storyline.
Yeah,
that wouldn't have happened in 1988 or 1989,
Well, maybe. We just might not have known about it. So she, she'll play a role, especially later, and then again with these guys the next month. But so Meanie comes in here, messes with Goldust's head, but Goldust works pretty aggressively and finishes him off in 3 minutes. So the feud itself kind of tapers off here, and then it'll take a weird direction heading into Mania. This would be Meanie's actually only pay-per-view match. He'd be at Mania, but this is it for him here in the ring. So 0-1, or I guess 0-2 if you count the Rumble he goes down at.
Yeah.
I liked it. I liked the head games. I thought this was the most interesting Goldust has been in a while. I didn't really dig the Val feud. I liked the whole Preacher gimmick, but ever since going back to the Goldust stuff, I thought he's been kind of bland. So to me, this is really the first time. It was cool seeing him get all frustrated and, you know, getting suckered in by the same shit he was doing 3 years before.
Right. Yeah, and the match is just an unwatchable piece of crap. It's terrible. Blue Meanie is just not good. From a pure work rate, obviously, perspective, but we're not that's not the whole point of it. But Goldust just looks totally unmotivated. I think the skits and the storyline were good, but the match was just brought nothing to the table.
Well, I mean, what do you expect with these two? I mean, Goldust, like I said before, is hurting physically, and you got Meanie, who's just, you know, he's never been a work rate Marvel. He's fine. He can, you know, go in there and brawl, but he's not going to put on any kind of classic. So it was just not a good mashup. But yeah, that's why they gave him 3 minutes. So I thought it was fine. Yeah.
That was the redeeming quality. I think that's why I didn't give it a zero. So they made a good duration out of it. But again, Goldust, and I continue to mention this every month. His personal life is in shambles. You know, he's divorced or separated from his wife, and his daughter Dakota doesn't see, and he's totally hyped up on, you know, painkillers and vodka. It was just a mess. Again, you have to read the book Crossroads, and it just goes through the whole thing. It's not as detailed as I thought it should have been, but it was still pretty good. And it just tells you all through this early Attitude Era run in 98-99, he was a mess. So and sometimes you could see it in the ring. The storylines you can kind of get away with because he was still pretty good at the speak, you know, at cutting promos even when he was, you know, half out of it. But when it came time to deliver in the ring, it just wasn't there. So
well, look at that one redeeming quality gives the match one more than you have. So
yeah. So there you go. Goldust gets the win with the curtain call, a little over 3 minutes. Art Dust. Ardo Dono Dust.
That's what Dustin was sniffing, apparently.
yeah, exactly, pretty much. All right. Next up is the car just spikes incredibly to one of the most entertaining matches of the early year 1999, and honestly, a pay-per-view match, JR, that kind of stands the test of time. I think I watched it recently, and I think it stands the test of time. It's our first title match of the evening. The first time this belt has been defended on pay-per-view. It is the World Wrestling Federation Hardcore title in its first title defense. Mm-hmm. The champion was Mr. Head himself, Al Snow.
Incorrect. Title was vacant.
Ah, that is right. Explain.
Because Road Dogg was your champion.
That's
he had
right.
defeated the Big Boss Man on the December 15th edition of Raw.
That's right.
He was actually having a pretty good reign.
He did.
And him and Al Snow had the series going where they were going to fight three times. Of course, we saw the one out in the snow in Worcester. And match number two was supposed to be here at this pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. However, the night before on the 113 Raw, we found out Road Dogg had been laid out. He was taken out backstage, beaten, bloodied.
All right.
Equilibrium all off, so they didn't know what happened. So he got taken out of this match. Title was vacated. And Bob Holly's inserted. Now, him, Holly, and Al Snow had an issue the night before as well. Snow came out and did this really odd demonstration type of match where he decided he issued an open challenge. No one answered. So he started wrestling himself. He rammed his own head into the announce table. He was hitting himself with a tray. He put himself through a table. And Holly came out to talk him down, calm him down, because don't forget they were, you know, in the job squad together. Snow didn't like that. He shoved Holly back, and they ended up brawling all around ringside and having like a five-minute brawl that was finally busted up by referees. So they decided to put Holly in the match here, and this kind of begins a whole brand-new gimmick and identity for Holly, and one that fits him well. For the first time, you know, since he debuted in like 1994, I think he actually has a direction going on. So that's it here, vacant title on the line, and I really like this match. I agree with you. I think it holds up. They fight all around the ring. They go out into backstage. They even end up outside. And they start fighting in the freezing cold Mississippi River, which is really cool.
Yes. I think there might have been a little snow on the ground, too. My apologies.
Snow.
You're right. Ho-ho! I'm not going to do it. Yes, my correction. You are right. It was vacated. And the reason in kayfabe was because of the injury. But the reality of it was, for the first and well, certainly not the last time in Road Dogg's run in the WWF, he was caught...
Now, I'm curious, though, what...
Two tears in a bucket.
Well, I'm trying to find out. I mean, there was no policy back then, so it must have been pretty. He must have done something pretty egregious. He must have been like passed out or no showed an event or something to be suspended. Yeah. I mean, there was nothing in writing back then. I don't think.
No, there wasn't. No. Maybe he got caught with a. I mean, remember what happened to another superstar that wrestled in a dark match earlier in the evening, a couple years down the line. Maybe he had some legal trouble. Maybe he was. Cops caught him or something of that nature. It had to be pretty, like I said, it had to be pretty. It's not just, oh, I just failed a piss test. It wasn't that. It was definitely something, you know, a little more. For him to just totally vacate it, instead of these two just having a plain hardcore match, to actually put the title into it as well.
Right.
Something big must have happened there with Road Dogg.
But then he gets a pretty good push right upon his return.
Yeah.
So, kind of weird.
Probably just need to make an example of him that, you know, you guys got to watch your step and you know, and you will pay the price for it. And then, you know, all right, you paid your price and now get back. But you know, understand the next time you get caught, it could be worse.
I'm really curious. Maybe one of our Meltzer guys like Parv or Brett Carlson or Corey Ferrer out there that has the archives to Meltzer can go back to that era. If they're out, I don't know how far ahead he is or with the archives. If there's anything around this time period or if any of you out there know, let us know on the chats page because I'm really curious what the deal was. If he was really suspended. I know we have that in our review, but I can't remember where we found that. It's not... You know, Wikipedia, anything. I Googled it quick and didn't come across anything. So it must be. I wonder if it's something legit or if it's just one of the old internet rumors that was, you know, hanging around back in the late 90s.
There had to be another reason. I mean, Road Dogg, like you said, was on a roll.
Mm.
It's one thing. I mean, I understand if you want to do a storyline where he's injured and you just want to have Al and Holly have right. a hardcore match on the pay per view, but why inject the title in it?
Well, maybe to get the title off him without him jobbing. I can't see that mattering, though.
Well, that's what I'm saying. My point is, why take him off the show altogether? Why not make this a three-way? Well, we'll talk more about that in our next show. That they do have multiple guys eventually, but
yeah.
I mean, just have it a three-way or something. I mean,
yeah.
Why just take him off altogether and pull?
Yeah,
the belt
no, you're
off
right. There had to be some reason. I'm curious if anyone can confirm it. Now, I was also surprised at the time that Snow lost because they had been building him up so well, and I just assumed he was going to win the title because it was supposed to be best of three. You would think match two. Snow would win unless they were going to go with a clean sweep. So, and then they have Holly win the title, who had never really been involved with the hardcore stuff like Snow had. So it's kind of weird, but I guess they're just kind of building to a big Snow win. So Bob Holly is your new hardcore champion.
Yep.
He'd have a new nickname shortly enough. We'll get to that soon. But
yep.
For here, he's finally broken out of the Sparky Plug Job Squad gimmicks, and he has stepped it up.
Yep. I believe this match is on. I don't have Graham Cawthon's The History of WWE.com in front of me. Remember that that hardcore DVD? Actually, I think I have it right here. That single disc that came out a while back.
Graham
I think
doesn't have it listed on that DVD, but it may be. Maybe just doesn't have it.
Crash Hardcore Holly.
According to Graham, only the last two matches are on DVDs.
Yeah, I'm looking at it here. Crash Hardcore Holly. Yeah, no, I don't see it. No, I don't think so. So look, try to find it. It's got to be on YouTube or Daily Motion or something. It's a really fun match, and I really think that it stands the test of time. It's not. I don't think, unlike a lot of matches during the Attitude Era, just straight matches, this one I think stands the you know time over the last 14 years. So check it out. Good match. And yes, hardcore, Bob Holly is your new hardcore champion, and a little bit of an attitude change is in order. Our next match is one that kind of begins a multi-month storyline. This is another instance where the Attitude Era kind of really takes control. Because here you're dealing with two groups of people that the fans really don't like. So you're wondering where the vested interest is. The match is the Big Boss Man, a member of Mr. McMahon's corporation, versus Midian, a member of the Undertaker's growing ministry. Of course, now with the Acolytes and as JR mentioned, Viscera, which is now the new Mabel. Obviously, the corporation is running the show. I mean, it's Vince, it's Mr. McMahon's group. Meanwhile, the Undertaker wants to take over the WWF. JR, why don't you elaborate on how this storyline matriculated?
That you pretty much covered it. That was really where it happened. Like you said, they kidnapped Mabel at the Rumble, made him Viscera. And now Undertaker started dropping hints that he wanted to take over the promotion and control it with his ministry. So we enter this kind of odd heel-heel feud between McMahon and his corporation and Taker with his aspirations and things will ramp up severely heading into WrestleMania. But here, they're just kind of jockeying for position, so they let their two... You know, Midian was pretty much positioned as an enforcer. Yeah, I mean, the Acolytes, I guess, were the main enforcers, but Midian was kind of the guy he was sending out to do the dirty work in matches, so that's why he goes against Bossman here. And, you know, of all the options they had in both groups, I think they could have found something better than this debacle.
Yes. Yes.
At least, again, it's kept short. It's only 6 minutes. I think it's a little bit better than the mess with Road Dogg and Bossman at the Rumble. And Bossman wins clean, so the Ministry sent to the back licking their wounds. Now, the night before this, Midian actually picked up a big win. Well, he lost a match, but they beat the shit out of Godfather after. Godfather won by DQ over Viscera when Midian interfered, and then Midian and Viscera beat him down and splashed him a few times, and looked pretty strong heading in here. Midian was actually on commentary in that match. He did a pretty good job, surprisingly enough. Yeah, he was pretty coherent and really was pushing the storyline and acting kind of crazy. It was interesting. So Midian loses here. The corporation with a big win. Any thoughts on this one?
Not really. It's not very good. And no knock. Look, you and I both love the Boss Man. Most of PTB Nation loves the Boss Man. But let's be honest, he was never Mr. Perfect or anything. But he he always brought a fun match. And obviously he's in the best shape of his career. Midian's it's Midian. I mean it's Phineas Godwin. So I mean I wasn't expecting much out of it. But it was a storyline advancer. And hey. You're going to get used to this because this is what you're going to see a lot of during the next 3 years of the Attitude Era. Is you're going to see undercard matches that are absolute garbage, but in the whole general grand scope of things, they're storyline advancers. That's all they are.
Right. And in this year, pay-per-views are made or broken by one thing. Well, a couple things. One is, are the characters on that night over? Are the stories compelling? Mm-hmm. And does the main event carry the show?
The main event. Exactly.
And we saw that a lot in 98. And it carries on here. So this would be the story of this show. I mean, a lot of these undercard matches have good feuds, are very interesting, but the crux will be, can the two big matches carry the show? And we'll analyze that at the end.
Yes.
And this one, I think this show's a prime example of that theory.
Precisely. So, so the Big Boss Man wins the match. But the storyline continues, and as The Undertaker tries to take over Mr. McMahon's company. Of course, really the whole goal of his Taker is getting back at Vince for fucking him over at the end of 98 when he was allegedly promised the world title and all this other jazz. So, all right, next up, we have a nice, pretty solid tag match here. A team that we haven't really, well, one team that's been kind of, floating, not aimlessly, but they've kind of bonded since they really have nowhere to go. And that is the former Nation members, D'Lo Brown and Mark Henry, who've kind of had their own storylines. But
yeah, well, yeah, the whole thing with, separate storylines together as well. The whole thing with D'Lo and the miscarriage with Terry, and it was turned out that she was never really pregnant, and D'Lo kicked her to the curb. And then Mark Henry, coming off the China Sammy mess, has now been revealed to become a sex addict. Mm-hmm. And, can't get enough of the divas and the women. He's always staring and leching and leering and everything else. And he has a new nickname now, Sexual Chocolate, as Scott referenced on the last show. I liked this gimmick from Mark Henry. I thought for the first time he was actually getting to show some personality, and I thought he played it up well.
I did too. Yep.
He still wasn't delivering that well in the ring, but character wise, I thought it was interesting enough. So at least it gave him a hook.
Yes. Yeah. And D'Lo was one of the mid card MVPs of '98.
Yeah. And he was gaining a lot of steam. Yep.
Yeah. He was looking good in the ring.
He was a guy, one of those guys where. When Ross was around, or even Cole, whoever, they would plug him up as the future. Him, Val Venus, and a few of these other guys were the future. D'Lo was a guy you thought would be around for, a decade winning major titles.
Yes. But I thought the Sexual Chocolate role was funny. And I liked he had the little Hershey Kiss thing on the tights, and it was pretty funny. The team there.
I don't do any tricks.
I don't think he has tights with a Hershey Kiss on it, though.
He should. Or Hershey Kiss being eaten by a bug.
Yes, chocolate termites. Are the other team, the opponents of D'Lo and Mark Henry, are an interesting team put together. JR, why don't you let us know how that got started and how this match came to be and how this team came to be.
But I just jump.
And get out of the way of the chocolate kiss.
Well, Jeff Jarrett...
Maybe they had a chocolate wonderfall at Sizzler that day, and that's why Terry Funk couldn't ref Terry Funk's match.
Yeah, he wanted some good mood food.
That's right. Come on, Dennis. We want you here.
We want you under the chocolate. Maybe he'd dress up like Blue Dust and go under the chocolate wonderfall.
Chocolate wonderfall. All right. Talk about our team here.
Jeff Jarrett, Owen Hart, we mentioned them at the Rumble, had began teaming up. Mm-hmm. Had two guys that were kind of floating around aimlessly, hooked them up together with Deborah. They earned a tag title shot with a win over the New Age Outlaws on January 11th. And then on January 25th, they cashed in. Mm-hmm. As the Blue Blazer entered the ring, hammered Shamrock with a guitar, and gave Owen and Jarrett the titles. And this was the aforementioned African-American Blue Blazer that we mentioned back at the Rumble, which I thought this was pretty funny. Many rumors have pegged that it was Coca Beware in the role. I don't know if that was ever confirmed, but
it would have been
very exciting if it was. So we have new tag team champions, Scott. Before we get to the match, what did you think of these guys as champs?
They were tremendous. We needed a good, you know, the tag division. We talked about it throughout the last four or five shows in 98. We talked about it with Kevin too. The tag division suffered a lot. When they won the titles early in the year and they had the feud with the Road Warrior or Legion of Doom and they had those matches, everything was fine. And then by the summer, you know, they got kind of half involved in the, with Kane and Mankind and the whole Taker thing, all that stuff. And then after that, they just kind of like were there. Like there wasn't much for them going on, and they were still the best tag team in the promotion. So I thought it was prime for us to have a good, solid heel team, not only just of good heels, but good workers. And both guys are. Owen and Jarrett are very good workers in the ring. And I think I think it was a good team, both pissed off, angry guys who feel disrespected, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it worked out really well. And I was kind of stunned. I'm not going to lie. I was kind of stunned when they won the titles. I didn't think they would.
No?
I thought – no, not really. I thought they wanted to keep the strength of the corporation. But I'm going to mention – I'll talk more about the corporation a little bit later on. It didn't as much as it was a good faction, you could kind of start seeing where the power structure started to change and the other guys started becoming less important. We'll get to that in a couple matches.
Yeah, right, because Shamrock and Boss Man were definitely positioned very strongly early. And Boss Man still was. He was still getting a lot of rub as the main guy. Shamrock seems to be falling back a little bit. And, I liked the Blazer thing, how this almost puts it to bed. We wish it was for good, but this is like one of the last times we see him for a little while. And I thought it was a good payoff to that whole angle to prove it finally wasn't Owen that had been behind all the Blazer attacks, and they have them win the tag titles. I thought it was fine. I didn't think Shamrock and Bossman really needed the titles. It was fine to get them, use them to get it off the Outlaws. But I thought Owen and Jarrett made for a good pairing, and I thought it was a good use of them. Two guys that were best suited as heels, and the heel picture is very cluttered right now with the Ministry and the Corporation on top. There was really no room for these guys. It was best off putting them in the tag division and let them carry things for a while.
Yeah, and again, great workers, and Owen just seemed so mature. You know, it was finally, I think we saw it towards the end of 97 into the beginning of 98. Finally, at this point, I think Owen really started to become like an elder statesman, but he was no longer just Brett's kid brother.
Yeah,
he really became a veteran of this roster. I'm not going to lie, it's going to bother me as time progresses as we move ahead, but he really became a solid elder statesman of the roster, a guy that young guys can look up to, and this team is awesome. But I was still surprised, but not upset by any stretch. Very happy. They deserved it, and they would get on a good run. And this actually was not a bad match. A standard pay-per-view fare, but fun. You know, both teams went out pretty well. Again, I guess if you go on the list, Mark Henry's probably at the bottom, but he gave his all. And this is also a good match in a sense that you really get to see how D'Lo has become a really good worker, because he, I don't want to say he carried his team, but he obviously was the bigger workhorse of the two. So it's just a good match and a lot of, and good guys in this match who needed a little bit of the spotlight and show that they were. They could carry the load in the mid-card, which they needed to because that's...
The one restaurant with unlimited amazing food for one incredibly low price just might have gone deliciously off the chart. Only Golden Corral would introduce the lusciously amazing chocolate Wonderfall. Dip...
Yeah! well, one piece before we get to the match itself or, wrap up the match, we have a new debut accompanying D'Lo and Mark Henry. And as we talked about, Mark Kearney had his eyes on the ladies, and the night before, we were having a singles match pitting members of this team. It was D'Lo Brown and Jeff Jarrett, and Henry was smitten with Deborah, as most men were at this time.
Yes.
So D'Lo grabs the mic, he tells Henry to step down a bit, focus on the gold, the title shot that's coming, but he knows what Henry enjoys, and he decided to get him a present. Someone will give Henry whatever he wants, wherever he wants, and whenever he wants it. So Henry gets all excited. And D'Lo Brown brings out Ivory.
What?
A chick that comes out with a... Yes.
No.
Wash your fucking mouth out with it. So Ivory comes out, you know, tight little package, wearing a scarf and a little tight pants, and she comes out, and it sounds, kind of sounds like she's a hooker. By the way, D'Lo explains it.
Yes.
It's like he bought this woman for Henry, so I don't know. Human sex trafficking or something by D'Lo Brown. Exactly. That would have been a great, you know, this, they could have picked up the Draws and Key storyline from the drug dealers that with, once the Road Warriors left, they could have done sex trafficking as well.
Yeah, lovely.
Importing these women from across the border,
yes.
Hooking them up with different wrestlers.
All of a sudden, you're going to see skits with, you know, 47 Asian women just walking aimlessly backstage.
Well, Godfather could have been included in that, too. That's where some of his women were coming from.
Awesome.
We got to run this by Kevin next time he's on, see if he likes the idea.
That definitely would have been very Russo-rific. Right
there, fantastic. That's where Ryan Shamrock, that's where that all stems from. This whole D'Lo Brown hooking up with Draws and running a sex ring.
Oh, good God.
What, so anyway, man. Ivory comes out, embraces with Henry, and she's actually positioned as kind of sexual very early on in this, and that night anyway. She's kind of flirting around with Henry on the floor, but as the, even by this show already, she had kind of let that go and is positioned more as like a manager or a second more than any kind of interest for Henry. They didn't really push any kind of love story between the two of them, so I don't know if they aborted the idea or if the idea was to get Henry away from it. I don't know. So Ivory is portrayed by, she was known as Tina Ferrari in the short-lived GLOW Federation. Do you have any memories of GLOW, Scott?
I do have memories of GLOW. Wasn't that Stallone's mom? Wasn't that her? That was her promotion, wasn't it?
Who's?
I think she was Sylvester Stallone's mom. Wasn't that her?
Really?
I think it wasn't that her promotion. Wasn't she like funding that or something?
Well, I'll get to it in a second. Let me see. Real name, of course, Lisa Moretti.
Yep.
She was trained by Mondo Guerrero and Wendy Richter.
Wow. Don't put any masks on.
Did a little UWF, did a little GLOW, and then debuted here as well in this promotion. And she was pretty good in GLOW. You know, she had a little bit of a background. Yep. And it's good to see them bringing in some women with working backgrounds, as
yes.
we saw with Tori last month. Hasn't wrestled much yet, but yeah. Ivory as well.
I remember in GLOW, Tina Ferrari. I do remember her. And I remember the I don't remember her name, but she was like a southern, like hill, not hillbilly, but like a southern farm girl or Midwest farm girl. She had like, she was blonde with pigtails. She wrestled in like sexy overall kind
of
thing.
Well, there's a lot of people. All right, hang on one sec. So this GLOW is created by Matt Simber as an evolution of a somewhat different original concept by David McLean. Of course, he's the money mark that does all the women's promotions. Yep. Wrestlicious, and I think he did that one recently. That began in the aftermath of Jackie Stallone's physical fitness gym for women only, Barbarella's. David and Jackie promoted the girls for the entire running of the program, while Matt Simber very typically remained out of the spotlight with two notable exceptions. Mondo Guerrero trained all the girls initially. Syndicated GLOW aired for four seasons, 86 through 90, from the Riviera Hotel on the Las Vegas Strip. So not all the women were taking it seriously during the pilot, so Mondo put one of them in a submission hold and made her cry. Pretty awesome. So obviously it was very different from the WWF. They had actual seasons where wrestlers would drop or be added or change. So it's kind of a different idea. Jackie Stallone was a figurehead owner and manager of the Good Girls, and Aunt Kitty was a manager of the Bad Girls.
The Bad Girls. Well. Yep, Jackie Stallone. So, yep, she was one of the owners. So, yeah, it's, yeah, very weird. But
Amy the Farmer's Daughter, is that who you're thinking of?
Yeah, that must have been it. Trudy Adams.
Corporal Kelly. Sheanne Cher, the California
Doll.
Oh, I
remember doll. Little
Egypt. Broomhilda.
I remember Broomhilda, yes. I remember Little Egypt.
Jailbait. Stinky. Sunny.
Susie Stinky.
Spirit.
Little Egypt was the other one I remember.
Tulsa.
Tiffany Mellon.
Vine.
The Heavy Metal Sisters. The Heavy Metal
Sisters. What
the
fuck? Zelda the Brain. Okay. Pepper.
Is that like Sarah in the Brain?
Matilda the Hun.
Vicky Victory.
Good stuff.
Awesome. Mountain Fiji.
Soul Patrol. If anyone points us to GLOW, maybe we'll do a Vintage Vault review of GLOW.
We'll just see if J.O.'s got anything stashed away.
No, he's got stuff that's more provocative than GLOW.
Yes,
as Michael Vincent
could
attest to.
You mean Vixen with three... Vixen with three X's?
Michael Vixenit.
Lightning. I like Matilda the Hun. Little
I know Lightning are everywhere. She's even a female wrestler. All right, let's get back to this match here.
Right,
so, yes, the tag team champion's in there, and Ivory does get involved early on, and, of course, she was there really to thwart Deborah. And Jarrett ends up making Henry tap to the figure four. I believe the guitar was involved in this finish as well. So I remember thinking at the time that Henry and D'Lo were actually going to win. I was kind of surprised because it seemed like they were pushing them strong – They were focusing on him. And watching it, Jarrett and Owen didn't seem to be a team that was getting a push despite being champions. They were just kind of on week after week and didn't seem to be dominant in any phase, if that makes sense. Henry and D'Lo, on the other hand, really were getting positioned to be kind of a force.
Yeah. And
You're right.
I totally lost my
stroke over there.
Totally
I'm pretty sure. Anyway, Deborah distracted the ref, and they used the guitar, and then set up the figure four. So
yeah.
It seemed like this feud would probably continue to Mania logically, and maybe you'd have D'Lo and Mark Henry win there. And as we'll see, it does seem to be going that way when we get to Mania.
Yeah. No, so, sorry. Instead of I actually took the better route. Instead of repeating something you said, I actually just stopped because of a virus thing just popped up on my laptop, and I just blew it out. So never mind. Yeah. What did you think of Deborah at this point? You think she was almost being positioned beyond some of the other women in the company, do you think?
I stay fit. I watch what I eat.
He don't look like Sable, that's right.
Well, I don't think she's being positioned as bigger than Sable. No, I would not say that. Okay. She was being positioned as bigger than her team, I think. It was clear that they had plans for her and her assets. She was wearing the tight suits and really starting to be more involved in things. So yeah, I think they did have big plans for her. I can't say right now she's being positioned as the top female, but you could see where things were headed.
Yes. Yeah. So Owen and Jeff are still your World Wrestling Federation tag team champions. Our next match is another title match, our third of the evening. This one for the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental title, and we continue on with this weird, smarmy
P.S. your cunt is in the sink.
Wow, where's he been? He came out behind Dennis Stamp wondering where the Chocolate Wonderfall was. Ken Shamrock, still your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, taking on a guy we mentioned earlier who was in the Goldust feud, and that is, of course, Val Venus. And these two guys, part of this intertwined Ryan Shamrock sister...
PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
It's a Kenny McMahon Jr. here with your Jim Duggan update. Duggan's not here, but I am, and I got a lot to talk about. First of all, Chris Scola, I'm tired of this fucking song. I hear you don't like it very much either. Is that true?
I absolutely despise it, Mr. McMahon.
Well, why don't you take a break from working out at Barbarella's? Why don't you fucking come back here? And I got a new theme song. I'm going to break that out, and then I got more shit to talk about.
Yes, sir.
Eat my pussy right. All right, Chris Golo. Listen here, I heard you were busy blowing smoke up your ass and shooting it out the chimney, and you voted on a new pope. I thought we had a deal that you were going to choose me. I can't believe somehow they found some fucking jabroni that was actually older than you. How is this possible?
I don't know, but I was really upset because I wanted it to be...
And what kind of name is Francis?
I wanted it to be Pope Vincent I.
You need a man's name, like Brutus. Brutus
pope
Beefcake.
Bruce.
The Pope. Haku. You need a man's name. Akeem. Berserker. Tugboat. Something strong that shows assertiveness. Not Francis. Bastion Booger. Warlord. Sato. Dingo Warrior. Something.
Pope
Christ.
Dingo?
Huh?
Pope Dingo the First?
Yes, Pope Dingo the First. That makes me bow down. That gets the blood flowing. If I heard from Pope Dingo and he said, you can't get an abortion, I'd have that fucking baby. I'll tell you that much, Chris Golo. I wouldn't be paying for all those abortions.
It would be a strong masculine child.
Yeah, I mean, kids I'd have, I'd be splitting the fucking Federation into 15 different territories. All the bitches I've knocked up.
And the Cardinals want to have the whole conclave of territories just for you.
Oh, Francis. Give me a fucking break. I'm out of here. Suck it, bitch. Eat my pussy rat.
Okay. Oh God. I actually have the intestinal fortitude to go to church on Sunday, go to the candles, put in my donation of whatever it is, I think it's $2, and light a candle for Pope Berserker.
You need to take a break here, are you okay? You want to check?
It sounds like he was introducing the Cardinals. Here's who did the vote. Cardinal Sato.
He's got a lot of things to say. A lot of views on the Catholic Church.
I love the song, too. I didn't realize I was working out at Jane Fonda's gym. Barbarella's?
Yeah, apparently.
Okay.
He knows all.
All right, back to the business at hand. All right, Val Venus is like the song, by the way, too. Even better. If we never have to hear Doug that other stupid song again, he could sing whatever the hell he wants.
Vince has been busting out his vocal chops a lot lately. It's the second time he's sung in the last couple weeks.
Maybe he's trying to become the new official singer of the Place to Be podcast and replacing our other exceptional singer. Maybe there's a duet in our future. Who knows? All right, back to the business at hand. Val Venus, Ken Shamrock for the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship. And as I mentioned, we're continuing on with this bizarre Ryan Shamrock storyline.
Well, it's not too bizarre. I mean, you get this whole thing. She was at ringside. Val Venus came out during a match, made a move on her. Ken came out to stand up for her, and it was revealed that was his sister. So, of course, you know, Val, whenever he sees a hot piece of puss, he's going to go after it.
Oh, yeah.
And doesn't care who gets hurt or involved. So he ends up having a fling with Ryan, banging her week in and week out. We see their video, Shaving Ryan's Privates, if you remember. That was the
yes.
Adult movie they filmed.
Shaving Ryan's Privates.
And, you know, Shamrock, Ken had just flipped out. He could not stand that Val was defiling his sister. So
yes.
The night before on that Raw was actually pretty cool. They showed this footage, this grainy footage. You know, the hotel is above the Sky Dome.
Mm-hmm.
In the Sky Dome. A cameraman has zoomed way up into one of the suites where the shades were drawn, and it was Shamrock and Ryan Shamrock and Val in towels and getting busy. So it was kind of a neat little thing. So Val and Shamrock, they had a pretty big brawl twice on that show, and Shamrock went to the ankle. After he beat up Val, a bunch of referees hit the ring, and Shamrock beat the shit out of all of them as well. So later in the night, Earl Hebner comes out, and he says, we are not refereeing any more of Ken Shamrock's matches. And basically, if no one steps up to referee the match at the pay-per-view, Shamrock will have to forfeit his title. So Billy Gunn, of course, would be the man that stepped up, signed the name to the piece of paper, revealed his referee shirt during a DX promo, and was inserted back into this feud. He still, you know, demanded that he was the number one contender for the IC title, felt like he should have been involved after the Rumble match still. So kind of a three-way issue going on here with these guys. Val fighting Shamrock and Billy as the referee.
Yes. And this started what many feel was the trend of the Intercontinental title kind of being devalued. And now you're seeing, you know, guys that many feel, you know, have no business being in world, you know, any type of title feuds. They're goofy mid-carders. But like I said, look, not everybody is Razor Ramon, okay? Not everybody is Shawn Michaels. Right? You know, it's you dance with the date you brought. You know, you work with what you got. And I have any problem with any of these guys being involved in the title picture.
No. These are guys that belong in that mix.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the work, you know. And this is a really good match. I mean, they gave it a lot of time. I mean, almost 16 minutes. That's a lot for these guys. And I thought Billy Gunn worked good as the ref. I thought the whole thing was fine. I mean, the match itself is, you know, pretty good. Nothing earth-shattering, but solid. And the storyline was different, unique. And
well, Gunn, yeah, he plays it down the middle for a while. Mm-hmm. And then towards the end, he is slow counting Shamrock and pissing Shamrock off. So Shamrock gets the ankle lock on Val. Val makes the ropes with the help of Ryan. Ken goes to the floor and starts shouting at his sister. And this is the infamous moment that I'm sure everyone remembers, where he audibly tells her to slap him to give her the cue, and then she slaps him. So it's
yes.
funny. Slap me. Val comes out, rolls him, or he gets back in the ring. Val rolls him up, and Billy Gunn gives a quick count. And Val, Venus, Mr. Penis, is your new IC champion. Mm-hmm. And then Billy actually beats Val down after the match. So Billy kind of, you know, screws Shamrock over, but then beats Val down too, kind of staking his claim to the IC title.
Yes. And, you know, all three guys worked really hard here. And, you know, except for, you know, Shamrock's lack of being able to pull off. I mean, he's also dealing with a non-professional either. So, well, maybe she's a professional in another way. But, you know, she didn't know what, you know, he had to do it that way. The sad thing is maybe the camera was a little too close. But, I mean, how far away could you have them if that's what the focus of the moment was? So.
Slap me.
But, you know what? Overall, the package is fine. The match is solid enough. And
what
Val
package?
Pope Santo's package, the new World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion.
Well, what did you think, though? Good choice for the IC strap around Val's waist, or do you think they should have kept it on Shamrock a little longer?
No, I think Val earned it. Shammy had a good run, but I think you know, Val really has earned it. He had a really good, you know, since he debuted in early, you know, early mid '98. He's had a pretty solid run. As a both heel face combo, depending on, you know, what the storyline was. And I think he earned it. Absolutely. Nothing against Kenny, but Kenny had his run.
Sadly, though, this kind of kicks off a time now where we are not going to get a lot of long reigns putting guys over.
This is the main thing. Like I said, it's not a question of the problem with the secondary belts was it was not a problem of the guys themselves. A lot of the time, it was a question of there was just no stability. I mean, you had, you know, this is where you start beginning. Right. You know, if somebody had the belt for longer than 6 weeks, it was like Bruno being world champion. I mean, so you just got to get used to it. But again, that was a con of the Attitude Era. Bang, quick. All right, this storyline's done. Move on to the next one. All right, this guy's been champ long enough. We got to use the IC belt to transfer to this guy and this, that, and the other thing. And
yeah, it gets out of control over the next like 3 or 4 months. Which is too bad. I thought Val maybe earned a better reign with this feud and thing going on with Ryan. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes with that. And, you know, things will get very out of control over the coming weeks. But for now, Val Venus reigns supreme over the IC title division. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Ken Shamrock really having a bad couple weeks here. Loses the tag title, loses IC title. Val Venus is laying the wood down on his sister.
Mm-hmm. He got smacked in the back with a chair in that Mick Rock title match in Worcester.
Yep.
Remember, he ran in to break up the thing, and then, you know, to break up the, the mandible claw, and then he got smoked with a...
Having a rough month. Ever since they won the tag title, it seems to all be downhill for him.
Yes. All right, our next match, kind of, I would say it's a main event match, but it's almost like the main event of...
It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
Mm. It's gotta be Kane!
What? wow.
Yeah, I like to know so I can be off and more.
What?
All right, our tag team match, a little mixed tag. Well, actually, it's not a mixed tag. It's a three-quarters tag, I guess. Obviously, you're hearing that, and that means the leader of D-Generation X.
And the leader of your cockles of your hot.
Exactly.
Hot. Heart.
Hot. In my hot. Max. Of course, I'm talking about Triple H, teaming with, I believe still, let me double-check my notes here. Yes, still the World Wrestling Federation European Champion. And that is X-Pac taking on, as you heard Vince yell there, Kane, and an interesting partner. Delve into this for us, JR.
Okay. Well, Kane, of course, is still in indentured servituded to the corporation.
Yes.
And Shane had really taken over the reins of this whole project. We're really just torturing Kane and making him do all his dirty work. Now, the 125 Raw, Triple H actually earned a world title match with The Rock. It was an I Quit match. The corporation had China hostage, and they said if Triple H didn't tank the match, he'd lay her out. They'd lay her out. So after a few minutes, Triple H finally caved and said, "I quit." China then dropped down and hit a low blow on her boyfriend, the game.
No.
Future game.
No.
Triple H. China has sold out and joined the corporation, turning her back. Breaking up the relationship of 2 years on TV here. Remember, she debuted in February of 97.
Yep.
Began palling around with Kane, using her feminine wiles to get him to do bad things to DX. So Kane kind of lured in by China here, and Shane McMahon doing the bidding. So, of course, Triple H and X-Pac get the band together and decide they're going to take these two out.
Very upsetting. But now, probably a little seeds of discontent between, you know, guys in the corporation and the corporation DX thing. And they never had a full-blown storyline. Obviously, it kind of changed.
Yeah, they kind of have, though.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, after the whole Sean thing happened and he was gone.
Yeah, it's been a few since then, I think, with, you know, you still have the Outlaws and Bossman and Shamrock going at it and different stuff like that. And X-Pac and Kane actually did fight the night before on that Raw, and that ended in a brawl. China came out, slammed X-Pac, Kane, you know, they all brawled, and China was able to escape before Hunter could get his hands on her. So the whole thing leading into this was, you know, would Hunter get revenge? Could he beat her up? You know, they didn't know what would happen. And Kane and China still kind of wreaking havoc. Now, it seems like Kane's almost slipping into not minding the corporation stuff thanks to China.
Yeah, he no longer feels like he's, you know, being, you know, held down you know, having to do things he doesn't want to do. And definitely the fans, I mean, almost as much as Triple H is a babyface, you're almost seeing, you know, big time face heat for Kane. He's becoming one of the most popular guys in the company. And we'll see as it continues that actually dictates a lot of what happens over the coming weeks. And, you know, solid match. Again, this match was longer than I thought it would be. I mean, it was a little under 15 minutes.
Yeah, and it was really good. I really like this match.
I do, too.
I think it's kind of underrated. I think it's a forgotten little gem. Definitely one where I've went back and rewatched, and they work well together, these four. Surprisingly enough, this is probably China's best match, definitely to this point, and probably for a while. These four, you know, really go all out. They don't lay off China at all, and Triple H and X-Pac were both in a pretty good spot. Triple H is starting to get his legs back under him, and X-Pac has really been, you know, another one of the guys that's been the mid-card MVP, putting on good matches week in and out. So I always dug this match. Like you said, 15 minutes. China and Kane win. China pins Triple H after a Kane choke slam. So they're really pushing this feud towards Mania, and DX takes the fall. What did you think as a big-time DX mark? Did you like where this was going, or were you pretty pissed at China?
I was pissed, but I was also a little perplexed as to where they were going with it. I mean, obviously, we were getting close to WrestleMania, so obviously they had something in the works. What I liked about this match is that, you know, Triple H, I mean, China, she doesn't work soft, let's put it that way. And she was giving Triple H some nasty forearm shots, like almost put the point of her elbow into his jaw. So, I mean, he put her over, and she became this is where you start seeing the seeds of what would happen later on in the year, where, you know, China would really start to become her own superstar.
Yeah.
And I think you see it big time here. I think the win, as much as it, you know, ached me as a DX guy, for storyline purposes, I think it needed to happen. I think you needed to keep Kane hot, because even though Kane was on the heel camp, I think there was still a lot of face sympathy for him. So,
yep. And just to also add, Shane McMahon was involved here as well. He came out distracted, X-Pac chased him away, and that's how Triple H ate the pin to Kane and China.
Yes. So there you go. China and Kane get the win over Triple H and X-Pac. And then the next night, Shane O'Mac really sticks it to DX. Mm-hmm. And we'll mention that, of course, next week when we do.
And you really stick it to Triple H.
I walked into that one. All right. We're going to take a breather. We plowed through the mid-card, which has had its mostly good points, a couple
you
of
really
duds.
Plowed through Triple H's mid-card.
Oh, God, stop.
Is that your safe word?
Mid-card. Will you stop? Mid-card.
Say mid-card.
Mid-card.
I won't stop right until you say it.
Mid-card. All right. We're going to take a breather. We've had a good show so far, and we've had some ups and downs in the mid-card. But coming up next, we have our last two matches, both of which huge double main event.
Huge.
Huge double main event. And we have the WWF Championship and Steel Cage match. But first, a word from our sponsors. Because.
Mid-card.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it!
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones.
Oh. The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best!
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko!
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunderlips, I was winning world titles.
So a guy from across the pond and a dude from the south, Where the Big Boys Play. It's a great podcast. Harvard Chat are awesome. Check them out. Also check out WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Great message board, plenty of topics to browse, the Still Real to Us podcast, and much, much more. Also, our message board, which is awesome, bigelow34.proboards.com. It's where PTB really began. Written reviews and a boatload of them in PTB Nation. We have you to thank for that. Plus the territory wars, a whole lot more. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, you can head there. Also head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, and more details on that. Also, our good friend Graham Cawthon, History of WWE.com, the best research site you will ever find. Also, another sponsor to the show, the Wrestling Forum, TWFnews.com, their wrestling forum, a blog site, much, much more. The guys at TWF creating a wrestling media nation, many blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts. Yours could be included at the official forum of WrestleChat.net and the place to be. We've joined up as well. So check them out, find out what they're about at TWFnews.com. Also, you can check out our show at GetThePointRadio.com, my good friend Mike. It's a great online radio station. You're in the mood for wrestling, but you want to listen to music, pop it on. He plays music all day long. But you can also check his archive on iTunes, and all of our shows are there as well. Big site.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
All right, Nation, we are back here on the Place to Be podcast. Hope you enjoyed that nice, beautiful break. The lovely tones of Parv, Chad, and Mr. Scotty C.
Yes, yes, yes. And it is, of course, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre in tonight's edition of the Vintage Vault. We've got two matches left, both of which top quality and both of which big, the two anchor feuds going on right now.
Yeah, the two big shows that are really, two big matches that are leading this show.
Yes. We right now have our World Wrestling Federation championship match. Your champion, well, let's see, the last time we talked, JR, the last time we were in the vault, The Rock was your champion after defeating Mankind in the I Quit match at the Rumble
Out Man. How much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
You weren't saying much of anything, Mick, after getting plowed and brains were oozing out of the top of your head.
Yes.
After nine or, what was that? What did we say it was? 11 or nine? Something like that. 9, 10, or 11 chair shots. Bad ones.
Well, that all turned quickly.
Yes.
For the former champion. Because the night after the Rumble, Rock was waiting for his $100,000 bounty. Mm-hmm. That he was supposed to cash in for taking out Stone Cold and giving Vince the Rumble win. The money was in transit to Raw. Mankind somehow hijacked the armored car. He was looting the bounty. And use that money to chorus Rock to put his title up in a special empty arena match at halftime of the Super Bowl. The match would air on USA. Mm-hmm. Broncos and Falcons. Chad Campbell all in a tither. Tizzy?
Yes.
It's a combination of tizzy and dither.
Tizzy and dither.
Tither.
And that, of course, was the night that John Elway played his final game.
Should have been the crying moment of Vinny Testaverde and the Jets.
That is true. You think they would have beat the Falcons?
Yes, I think we had this discussion. And yes, I do.
Okay.
What did you think of this idea? I thought it was a cool one, especially now.
I thought it was outstanding.
Yeah, that peak was very, very high. And also debuting during the Super Bowl, Scott, do you remember what else?
Debuted in the Super Bowl, 99? Bud Bowl?
Nope.
No. I don't remember.
The Raw Attitude, the WWE Attitude Get It commercial.
Oh, yes. And you know what's great? That's right. You know why? Because our friend Rick, one of your favorite guys, who knows everything about wrestling, he was in it.
Oh, boy.
He was,
now
he
I hate
was
it.
In the commercial. But you could never see him, though. Our friend Rick, who's a good friend of Mike, the head of GetThePointRadio.com, our friend Rick, he was, if you remember the commercial, when they're walking around and everything, he was choking the girl behind the front desk when Mick was saying, when Mick came on camera and said something for all mankind. And then, of course, things are blowing up and Vince looks on and goes, get it?
Yep.
So, yes. So he was
a big night on the Super Bowl for WWF here.
Yes.
And halftime, I thought the match was very interesting. It's one of a kind, obviously. There's no arena. I mean, no fans in the arena. Kind of a throwback to the old, what was it, Terry Funk and Jerry Lawler?
Yes. The last time these two, and it's kind of ironic because the last time, the only other known empty arena match occurred in this city.
Yep.
In Memphis in 1981, Jerry Lawler.
Of course. This one was not filmed in this city. But.
No, of course not.
So in that match, Mankind regained the world title. So they actually did a title change in this empty arena match during halftime of the Super Bowl, which is pretty cool. Did you watch? Did you tune in?
Absolutely, we did. Yeah, we were all at Mike's. We all watched it. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, I remember the Super Bowl was kind of bland anyway.
No, it was terrible. The Broncos, I think they were up at, it was like 24-3 at the half or something. Yeah,
Scott,
that game was over.
And I'm going to drop a little bit more knowledge on you. Do you know what else debuted after the Super Bowl that year?
Well, let's see. After the Super Bowl, must have been a show. La Femme Nikita?
No.
Kidding. No. Silk Stockings? No. What was it? A show that debuted after the Super Bowl? On whatever network?
Yep.
What network was that? NBC? 1999. Law and Order
SVU.
You
can't fight that.
I'll find a way with the help of my snarky cat lawyer, Meowsy McDermott. You've got to be kidding me. Ha!
One and only Family Guy.
Really?
On Fox.
Wow, that far
debuted.
Back. Holy crap.
Debuted the night after the Super Bowl.
I did. You know, I love the first, I would say I like the first like four seasons of, four and a half seasons of Family Guy.
The new ones aren't bad. I still watch them.
I don't know. I thought Seth MacFarlane's an annoying pain in the ass, but I thought the first like four and a half seasons of Family Guy were absolutely hilarious.
Well, it debuted here, lasted a couple of years, of course, and then due to ratings and other shit, it was a few years ahead of its time, and it was booted off the network, and of course, due to DVD sales and returning repeats on Cartoon Network, Fox actually brought it back.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so. And then Seth MacFarlane kind of towed the line because he was on Fox, so he towed the line of the humor. And then when he realized he was the one that was in control, then, you know, everything, the show, I thought the show changed. But the first, like, four seasons, I think, are awesome of that show. I love Stewie, and I like, it's a good show.
That was a big night down in Adam Murray's room, that Super Bowl. We watched the Super Bowl game, watched Halftime Heat, and then we watched Family Guy. So a very, very exciting night.
A very exciting night.
Worcester building of Assumption College.
Did he celebrate the evening with a shower?
No, never did. So what was also annoying was my roommate Mike Manning, huge Denver Broncos fan. And I remember we were on winter break still when the Broncos beat the Jets. And I remember I came back and he had his Elway jersey draped over my bunk.
Upset.
And then I refused to watch the Super Bowl with him. I had no intentions because I was so angry and so upset over the Jets losing that I refused.
Cold. Curtis Martin. He had a good year, right? He was with the Jets.
Oh, yeah.
Curtis Martin. Who are the receivers?
Keyshawn, Wayne Corbett.
Keyshawn. That's right, yeah. Good defense. That was a good team. I was rooting for you guys because I like Vinny. Vinny needed it. Vinny went through a pretty rough career up to that point. Bouncing around, top draft pick. Sucked with the Bucks. He was with Cleveland. He was with He was actually the first. Wasn't he the quarterback that transferred from the Browns to the Ravens?
So yeah, he came from the Ravens to the Jets.
Yeah, no, I was rooting for Vinny. I wanted to see them. And they had, what was it, 13-10 at the half or 17-10 at the half?
Oh, why are you doing this to me?
I'm sorry. But I'm just saying it was a good team. And then of course Elway went out, beat the Falcons, and then retired.
Curtis Martin. Dave Meggett was on that team. Glenn Foley and Ray Lucas are the backups. Keyshawn, Diedrich Ward, and Wayne Corbett. You had Kyle Brady, the tight end. Anderson is a fullback. Fred Baxter.
I like Fred Baxter. I remember him.
Glenn was on that team, one of my favorite cornerbacks of all time. Scott Frost. Remember him?
Scott Frost from Nebraska. I think he won the Heisman.
Here are some beast defensive players. Victor Green, Mo Lewis, Otis Smith, Brian Cox, Jason Ferguson, Pepper Johnson, Aaron Glenn, Anthony Pleasant, Ray Mickens, James Farrier, Corwin Brown. Stack team. Stack defense.
Mo Lewis.
John Hall was the kicker.
I forgot they had Brian Cox. Wow. That was a jack defense. Wow. Oh, it's a shame.
They only lost two games after Vinny took over.
Who was it? Browning Nagel? Was he the starter?
No, Glenn Foley.
And then he got hurt, he'd just get
benched? They lost to the Niners in overtime week one, Labor Day weekend, and then Foley got hurt. Vinny came in. They lost to the Ravens, and then they'd only lose two more the rest of the way.
Was that the game where Garrison Hurst ran back the kickoff and nobody touched him?
I punched a hole through my parents' closet door.
All right. Enough reminiscing about about gangrene. That whole night was great, and unfortunately, I don't think they could. I don't think they're popular enough to get away with it now. That was one of the few times that
I thought they could have done it a couple more times. Though they never really went back to it, especially when they had the relationship with MTV in later years. You thought they would have done something. I guess you get the celebrity death match. You know, they were involved in that on and off. But yeah, I don't know. Surprising.
Yeah, I was. They could have at least done it for a couple more years. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree. Probably three more. They could have gotten away with it for.
Yeah, I think by 03, I think the well would have run dry. But that sucks. That would have been fun.
Well, I guarantee you, if they get the network off the ground, so I bet they do something next year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I would think so. But they got to use it got to do title matches. Yeah. That's what the hook was. You know, they did it perfect. It was perfect there because you had a major title change. So now, you know, the fans could expect, you know, wow, anything can happen on this weird football thing. And unfortunately, they didn't go anywhere with it. But anyway, so Mankind is your World Wrestling Federation champion. As he pinned, if you remember, he pinned Rock by lowering
a... That was the only thing I did not like about that match was the finish. I thought that was hokey with the camera. They kept cutting the camera shot where you'd see Rock's face and then the camera from Rock's view. It was a little too much. I liked the match. I liked the concept and the brawl. But I thought that part was just a little over the top. So anyway, they come back on Raw, and Rock would, you know, demand his rematch, and Mick kind of played dumb and was like, no, I'm not going to give you a rematch. Well, again, kind of like the Rumble thing. And then they end up setting up a last man standing to finally finish this feud off. So I fully expected Rock to win and head into Mania as champion. You know, there's a little bit of question where they really switch the belt another time. And counting all the pay-per-view and TV matches they've had since November, they've had all world title matches, seven of them. Rock has won three, and Mankind has won three heading into this. Oh, I'm sorry. One would happen the next night as well. So,
yes.
At the end of this feud, as of February 16th, it'd be 3-3.
And a draw.
One.
And when would that draw be?
Right here, baby.
That's right. The match is fantastic. They took the violence level. Obviously, they amped it down a skosh after the, you know, absolute carnage of the previous month. But this was really a fun match. To me, it doesn't disappoint. I thought originally. Now, here's how the match ends. Both guys whack each other with chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And they both fall, and neither of them get up. Earl, I'm assuming it was Earl, was a ref. Just counted 10, and that was it. Nobody got up, so that's why it ended in
21 minutes.
Yeah, almost 22, 21:51.
Now, go ahead. I think
no, I was about to say, my one point, I just wanted your opinion. I was actually about to ask you a question. I was wondering for your opinion on this. I honestly thought that this ending was not intentional. I thought Rock was supposed to win, but I thought Mick cracked. I thought it was a receipt from the Rumble.
It may have been. I mean, they hit each other pretty good.
And Rock sold it. I legitimately thought Rock was out. And I thought this ending was not planned. I thought the X logo, the X symbol from the ref was coming up because he crushed him with that chair shot.
It was definitely planned because I think if not, I mean, beyond many reasons, I think if it wasn't, we would have seen, they would have pulled out some stop. They would have Shane come out and lift Rock. You know, they would have done some shenanigan to make sure he was up at 10. They had enough time with 10 seconds to get him up. Or they would have, I think Earl would have, they would have bumped Earl. Something would have happened. And we can confirm with Kevin. But
right.
I really think something would have happened otherwise to prove it true. So I think the plan all along was to kind of do the shock factor and have them do the double. I remember being pretty pissed off at the time. I didn't really care for the finish. I thought
I didn't either.
With
didn't
a feud like this, I thought we deserved a better finish to this one. And as we'll see, it actually would continue to the next night, I guess, to try and pop a rating and get you hooked for the Mania run. So yeah, in the finish, like you said, Rock reversed to Rock Bottom. Mankind still stood up. The two grabbed the chairs and ran into each other, knocked each other out. How do you rank these matches, Scott? Not counting the one the next night, because we'll talk about that at our next show. But how do you rank these first six?
Okay. Number six, Halftime Heat. Fun, but, Five, Survivor Series. Four, Worcester. Three, the Rumble. Let me make sure I count all these.
You missed, I don't know if you meant, Rock Bottom you have in there still.
Yeah, let me start over. Six, Halftime Heat. Five, Rock Bottom. Four, Survivor Series. Three, Worcester. Two, the Rumble. And one, this one.
Wow, this is the best one, huh?
Yeah, I thought this one was slightly better than the Rumble. I love the Rumble match. I thought this one actually was slightly better because they found a way to entertain me with violence without mimicking anything from the Rumble match.
All right, I'm going to go Rock Bottom last and Survivor Series fifth. I don't like either of those that much, but at least Survivor Series, they were winded. Rock mainly was, but they had that kind of a long night, and it was kind of confusing, but the storyline finality of it, to me, bumps a little bit ahead of Rock Bottom, which to me didn't have many redeeming qualities at all. So I'd say Rock Bottom, 6, Survivor Series, 5, Halftime Heat, 4. I think this 3, Rumble 2, and then Worcester 1 in my eyes.
Well, obviously,
Worcester to me had the best atmosphere.
Well, you had every right. You have every right to say that.
But even watching it, I think it had the best atmosphere. Okay. The Rumble
was violent.
Yeah, it's hard to, I hate to glorify that match because of what happened, but I think I like, that one and this one are close. I'd say they're close. So anyway, Mankind is still your world champion. Looks like he may actually be headed to WrestleMania, surprisingly enough.
That's very interesting, which makes you wonder what's happening in the... Well, this is where, finally, for the first time ever, the February pay-per-view leaves you some doubt as to WrestleMania.
Mm.
Because usually, as we've seen, JR, we've documented all of them thus far. The February pay-per-view is nothing more than February 98's pay-per-view didn't even have to happen, really.
Right.
And then 97, obviously, that was a audible because of what happened. 96, one match, and 95, and didn't have one. So, but this was the first one where you really had some seeds, and 2000 really leaves some doubt as to what was happening at the next month's show or the next pay-per-view. Because with Mick winning, now you're thinking to yourself, wait a minute. Nah, that doesn't – we've already seen this match three times. And now you're thinking to yourself, if somebody wins – if a certain person wins the main event, are those two going to wrestle again?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was fantastic, not knowing what the deal was. I agree with you, though. I'm actually surprised. This time, I did not think you were going to agree with me because I don't like this. I think this ending sucks too. I didn't think you were going to agree with me. I'm not going to lie. I thought you were going to say you didn't mind it.
I get why they did it. It's at the time though. I didn't like it. I thought it was, I don't know. I thought they could have found a better way out of it.
I agree. I'm not disagreeing with you. That's the whole point. I agree 100%. I just didn't.
It seemed like they almost gave it this stip just so they could do this finish.
They pretty much did. I agree with you 100%. That's probably what they probably it's exactly what they did. Right. But we gave it a high grade, and like I said, the chair shot that I really do think the chair shot that that Mick gives Rock, I think, was a bit of a receipt from
I'm sure
from the Rumble. So, all right, so there you go. The Rock and Mankind, no finish, and Mankind is still your World Wrestling Federation champion after the halftime heat victory.
All right, let's get to this main event.
Was the quickly though, one final question. Were you starting? We were talking about the bouncing around of titles, secondary belts. You can almost you'd be like, all right, whatever. All these world title switches in the short span of like 6 weeks. Did that bother you?
No, I was okay with it here because it was these two guys. It was like this really tight feud where neither guy, they kept getting one up on each other. So it's not like they kept hotshotting the title to like seven different guys. I was okay with it because these guys were presented as pretty equal. They were outsmarting each other, outwitting each other, and I thought it was fine leading into Mania. I mean, Rock was not a strong world champion anyway. So even if he held the title from Survivor Series through Mania, I don't think it adds a lot to his resume because he's not, he's booked as a puppet of Vince at this point. So I don't think he was really a guy that was going to come in as a dominant world champion under any circumstance. I mean, the real feud was with Vince. So to me, I think it's fine. You get you through from Survivor Series to here with a lot of entertaining matches. So for once, I'm okay with it.
Okay. So there you go. Rock and Mankind both get knocked out and nobody gets up and Mankind retains his World Wrestling Federation championship. All right, time to the main event, and it is one of the most anticipated, legitimate main event matches in recent memory. For after all the bantering they went back and forth with, and all the screwing each other, and all getting on each other's skin, and all the awesome Raw skits, finally... And after being teased with it back in April.
Yeah, so April of 98 was the first time we were teased with this match.
Yeah, teased with it. And now finally we have reached the moment of truth. And we were not going to get a tease here. It was going to happen. Stone Cold Steve Austin and Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
All right, so the night after the Rumble, Austin, of course, had been screwed. Flies down to San Antonio, visits his old friend Shawn Michaels, the commissioner. Vince comes out with The Rock. Vince announces he has no intention of facing then-champion Rock at WrestleMania, so he waives his right to the title match and said he would name a contender later on down the road. Well, about that time, Austin and Commissioner Michaels appear on the Titantron, drinking some Silver Bullets live from San Antonio. Shawn consults his handbook, which happens to be a bottle of Jack Daniels, and tells Vince that the winner of the Rumble were to forfeit his title shot, the runner-up would get it by proxy. Well, Vince doesn't like that idea, but Shawn and Austin give him an alternative. They could put the title shot up in a steel cage at the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. Vince agrees. Match was on. To add some intrigue, the night before on the special Saturday Night Raw that we've been talking about, Vince put... Well, first he made a match between Austin and Mankind. This to be a non-title match. And Vince was going to be the referee. So Vince comes out, and this is actually really, really funny. Before the match, he's given instructions, and he's like... Hang on, I want to get the exact... thing. This was really good from my review here. He said, he's tossing the rule book out the window. No handshakes. He wants eye gouging. Chairs and tables are legal and acceptable. Kicks to the groin are appreciated. He wants them to act like animals. So, pretty good stuff here. So then Austin basically says, well, someone's going to get their ass kicked, but it's not me or Mankind. It's you. And they put the mandible claw on Vince. And Austin stunners all the corporation, and they leave. Now, Austin could not touch Vince because there was also a stipulation leading into this match that if he did, he'd be fired if he touched him before their match. So there you go. We're set for the show. Later in the night on the Sky Dome, Vince then put Austin in a gauntlet against all the corporation members as punishment for what happened earlier. So he started off by defeating Ken Shamrock. Then he defeated Test. And each of these were by DQ because as soon as he was about to pin, the next guy jumped in and beat him up. Kane went down. China. Boss Man was last. Again, kind of showing the pecking order here, surprisingly enough. And then Boss Man's beating on Austin with his nightstick pretty brutally. He really beats the piss out of him with it. Mm-hmm. Vince comes in, orders everyone out of the ring, takes his jacket and shirt off, and he was fucking ripped. Vince jaws at Austin, covers him, and wins the gauntlet. Then he chugs a beer. The corporation holds Austin in the corner. They're choking him, and Vince gets in his face and is screaming at him, and that's how the show goes off the air. Also, one last piece of business. Vince had promised and warned that no corporation member would be involved in this match here tonight, and if they were, they'd be fired. Mm. So, a lot going on.
This has been, maybe for the first time since, maybe WrestleMania 6, or perhaps 7, but I would say more 6, the best WrestleMania build that they've had in almost a decade. It has been well sculpted.
You mean the whole show or the big match?
The build pretty much since September. I'm talking about this whole road.
This match, not the whole show.
No, this match. But this storyline has been fantastic. And this match is the
I don't know. I guess it's been the longest built. I mean, Flair Savage was pretty good.
Flair Savage was good, but that, of course, you know.
Sean Brett was really good.
I think it's because of the longevity that it lasted all the way back to September. But no, those were good. Those were good. I guess longevity. I mean, this started all the way back. These two all the way. Well, if you really want to go back, it goes all the way back to September of 97. But if you really want to be with it, it goes from when Austin lost the title at Breakdown. And there's a couple of things that, well, first off, before we get to that, you mentioned it at the Rumble. You played it at the Rumble because it was the Rumble song. But that's, of course, what makes its big debut on this fine evening.
Well, pay-per-view-wise, he actually used it on Raw.
Yeah, pay-per-view.
Yeah, no chance in hell, of course. This is official.
Yep. I love that skit with Sean where, you know, let me check the rule book, and he pulls the jack out. That's awesome. This match, for me anyway, is an example to the roster at that time and in years to come, at least over the next, say, 8 years from time to time. If your owner, a 50-something-year-old guy, can do some of the things he did in this match, so can you. Vince would never have his roster do anything for the craft, for the business, that he wouldn't do himself. And I have immense respect for him because of that.
Let me ask you one thing.
Yeah.
Did you think at the time, were you surprised they had this match on this pay-per-view?
No.
I remember thinking at the time they may do it at Mania. Like, it seemed like such a big deal they had built for so long and held off so long. And I remember just being pretty surprised they were having it. I mean, at this time, these shows were big for storylines, but not really big matches happened on these shows. You know, I don't know. It just seemed like they were saving it for Mania. And I remember thinking, wow, they're rushing it or they're jumping the gun with it. I guess I assumed they were going to do Rock Mankind again for the title to blow that off at Mania. And then they would do Austin Vince in the main event. I mean, it just seemed like that's where they were headed to me, that they were finally going to have this match at WrestleMania. Do you think it should have been?
No. I think Mania was booked exactly as the way it should have been. And we'll explain that, you know, when we get there. I had no problem with this because if you were going to book the Rumble the way you did, I don't think the whole Vince winning the Rumble, we talked about this when we read some of the feedback for it, that I don't think anybody could have handled having Vince win the Rumble and kind of sort, because everybody, remember, a lot of people got irked at that. I think you needed to solve that quickly before you really get to the Mania build. So I don't have a problem with putting this as a, because you don't really know how good this match is going to be either. You know, it's the first time Vince has ever been in a legitimate match. Steve is Steve. But you don't want to make this match a main event at your biggest show of the year and it come off like a complete piece of shit. So I don't have a problem, and I wasn't surprised, and I'm perfectly fine with it being at this show. I don't think you can risk having a match at WrestleMania with a guy who's never wrestled in an actual match before.
Yeah, but the heat would have been so great. I mean, it wouldn't have mattered. You know what I'm saying? I mean, come on. This match has been building for so long.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if they – I will tell you this, though. I will make this point. the way the Attitude Era was going at this point, it did feel like the way that they were writing things on a monthly basis, that the world title as the main event would have been irrelevant at this point. However, as we will document throughout the Attitude Era, when it came to WrestleMania, the title was still the number one thing.
Yeah. It just seemed like the one feud that could have maybe elevated. I mean, I'm just saying, this is my thought at the time. I'm not saying in hindsight it was right or wrong, but I remember at the time I was a little surprised.
Okay.
This was happening when it was. So let's talk quickly about the big debut. And it was kind of spoiled in a way. So I think it's the day before this, they had a press conference. And they announced the signing of a new star, Paul White. The former giant from WCW had jumped ship. He'd been buried on his way out. Mm-hmm. Contract expired February 8th on his 27th birthday. Giant and Nash had wrestled to determine who was the one giant, true giant of the NWO, and that was in January. Giant got laid out. So he debuted as Paul White on this press conference, and there were a lot of rumors with the names he was going to come in with. One was Titan, the corporate giant, if you remember that.
Yes.
And a few other things. So in this press conference, they kind of played it down the middle, and they basically said he'd be at the pay-per-view. They didn't say what role he would play. And then he would actually debut in this match as the match was wearing down. He busts through the mat, comes up through under the ring, picks up Austin, throws him into the side of the cage. The cage breaks, busts open. Austin swings out and drops down to the floor and wins the match. So right out of the gate, and this is something I want to track. I want to make this a point of something we track every month. Mm-hmm. How stupid they make Paul White look from his debut on. And to me, this was checkmark number one of looking like a fucking jackass, that he comes in as this big major force and immediately costs his boss the match and sends his arch rival to WrestleMania because he throws him to the side of the cage. And he stands there huffing and puffing like a dope. So I don't think it's the best debut. It was impressive, but yeah. So now the match itself was excellent. These two beat the piss out of each other. They go, 14 minutes before the bell even sounds. They're fighting all over the place. They finally get in the cage, and they go another 8 minutes. The bump of the match is Vince getting tossed off the side of the cage, and he goes flying through the announce table. He ended up breaking his tailbone in real life off the fall. And, Austin just beats the piss out of him. Vince does get some offense in. Vince does a crazy sick blade job, one of the first of many for him. And, of course, the iconic scene at the end will always carry this thing. As Austin's leaving, Vince on his knees, bloodied, gives the double bird.
Yep, the double ups. Well, he's got that look on his face.
Oh, what a great final shot of this pay-per-view.
Yes.
And a true Valentine's Day gift for any lady out there was this bloodbath.
Yes. It was incredible. And I think it dictated... how the writing and how important Vince as a character was going to be from here on out. He was important already.
Right.
And he was awesome in 98. But this is where you finally see that Vince will do anything to put something over. A 50-something-year-old guy in a big match. Nobody knew how this was going to come off. And what does he do? He gets himself thrown off a cage and crashed to a table. Lands on the corner. That's why he broke his collarbone. He didn't even land on the soft part of the table. He landed on the bend. And it's just an amazing example of how a guy will do anything for his business and for his product. And that's why I said, and I say that I'll say this more than once throughout time as we continue on through the Attitude Era and beyond with Vince. Say what you want about him. He might be a freaking lunatic, as we heard earlier in the show. But the guy will do anything to put over his product. And he would never expect his roster to do anything that he wouldn't do himself. And that's it. That's just the amazing thing. And
you gotta give him credit. They delivered. This is a great main event. And if you put this match at the main event of Mania, if they had done it and they had this exact match, I don't think you would have any complaints. I think it was a main event Mania quality match, honestly.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, it was a perfect blow off to a hot feud. The crowd was off the charts. These guys just busted their ass, tons of blood. As stupid as the finish was, it was still a cool swerve to have him debut and hook up with the corporation. And really just a perfect finish to this, you know, epic story that's been told. I mean, it's not over. It'll continue. But they finally get their hands on each other. It finally happens. And Austin wins after Vince had screwed him so many times. And even though they had touched, you know, even though Austin had beaten him up before, it still felt like a big deal.
Yep.
When he did it here. It didn't feel like, oh, they blew it by having them touch before. I think it was still a big deal because they never had this big one-on-one showdown. So I think a lot of momentum for WWF at this time heading into Mania. I think shaping up to be, at this point, looking like one of the hottest WrestleManias of all time. And the product was just smoking. The feuds were awesome. And the next few weeks, though, would take us on some weird twists and turns. And we'll analyze that in a couple weeks. But
yeah,
the show as a whole, I really liked the feel. I liked the story, the overall production. I mean, you got some dogs in here. But at the end of the night, I think anyone who ordered this had to be pleased with what they got. I mean, I think you have to go A- to an A just on the last two matches alone. Plus, the DX tag was good. And then you get a title change in there. I mean, really, Midi and Boss Man was really the only kind of blah match. The rest, and Goldust, Blue Dust is quick. The rest are all fine, and then you got some really good ones to close the show out. So I would say the shows that got the most, the matches that got the most time earned that time and really delivered. So to me, this is a winner of a show.
Absolutely. And as I mentioned before, it is the first February pay-per-view that really delivered on a build for two reasons. Number one, it was had legitimate matches and legitimate storyline activity. Number two, it had at the time left a little WrestleMania doubt. Well, now we have a little doubt left because at the moment, your world title match at WrestleMania 15 is Foley and Steve, and you think to yourself, really? So you knew that nothing was settled yet, and we'll talk about that next week on the next vault, how things finally kind of settle in and we get what we need at the upper part of the card from here on out.
Yeah.
I gave it an A. You gave it an A-. It's a great show. It's not on DVD. You could find the VHS tape on Amazon or on eBay. We highly recommend it. It's a good show. Again, you know, as JR said, there's a couple dogs, but that's okay. They're harmless and short.
Yeah.
So
just like you. All right. So the we're gonna go ahead. We got started late tonight. I am exhausted. It's been a long week, so we're gonna pass the feedback.
Yeah.
Lots of good ones. So you guys are really bringing the heat. And please don't let the fact that we don't always read the feedback discourage you. And it hasn't yet. But please don't let it discourage you. Keep bringing the feedback because there are going to be shows where we read it. And even if we don't, we're going to direct people there, and I think it's good discussion. And the message board itself has been unbelievable these last few days.
Yeah.
In the last couple of weeks, really. We have some new blood in there that's really helping us re-inject life. The territory war is going strong, but also we have a tournament going, Scott. And that is to determine the greatest WrestleMania match in history. We picked 96 matches.
Mm-hmm.
96 of them.
Yep.
Me and Chad Campbell. We gave the top 8 seeds, which are all separated, so they don't meet until the semifinals or the quarterfinals. We have semis, quarterfinals.
Quarter.
The first round is unbelievable. We're closing on like 40 votes for each matchup, which is unheard of on our message board. So if you want to get involved, it's a really cool tournament. Bigelow34ProBoards.com. It has its own forum. You can find it on there. Greatest WrestleMania Match Tournament. Get in there and vote. It's a lot of fun. A lot of the matchups are some tight ones or some blowouts, but a lot of cool stuff going on. The message board in general. We have all the reviews going. Of course, Scott, yourself, you review all the shows every week.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also syndicated on Wrestling Rambles with your Raw review.
Yep.
Going well.
Thank you. Yeah.
Other than that, let's talk about next week. And I guess put the official bow on Valentine's Day Massacre. Hope you enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. And again, keep your feedback coming. We will read it. We are taking a break from the Vintage Vault in this series next week. We have a couple different shows for you. Monday night, we have the March Madness Roundtable. Your brother Chris, Matt Rotella, Andrew Riesch makes his return.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go through, make our own PTB official bracket. There is a bracket challenge out there from the place to be. You can find that information on the message board or ask Derek Cornett. He's running it. So if you hit him up, he'll give you the password. You get your bracket in, and you can go up against the official one that we fill out next Monday. Of course, this is not for any kind of gambling purposes. There's no money being exchanged, no prizes, just for fun. Just some basketball junkies going out and doing some stuff. Wednesday, finally, we'll have you the pick your vintage vault. The poll is up. It's going to be closed on Friday. Right now, Big Event has 19 votes. Barely Legal has 12. Slamboree 99 has 4. The 111.93 Raw has three, and Starrcade 87 has one lonely vote. So, if you're a big fan of Barely Legal 97 and you don't want to hear a big event review, you better get over there in the next couple days and get your vote in. But for right now, it looks like we're doing big event next Wednesday. The week after that, Scott will return and do WrestleMania 15 on Monday, and then we got a special treat that Wednesday. So, that is your schedule for the next couple weeks. Anything you want to add before we wrap?
No, it was a great show tonight, JR, as always. Was with my brother last night down at Madison Square Garden in the first night of the Big East tournament, and he's very much looking forward to it. He's doing his research. Plenty of conference tournaments on TV this week. I actually was watching a little of the Mountain West tournament today. It was on my network, and of course the Big East tournament as well, and a bunch of others. So looking forward to Monday night. We always do. We're gonna try and kind of adjust the format a little bit so we're not too ridiculously long. But we're going to have a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to Reesh stepping all over everybody's comments like he always does with a smile.
It'll be good to have him back on and look for that Monday night. And, you know, even if you're not a College Hoops fan, it's worth checking out because we have a lot of laughs along the way. You know, we'll make fun of Rotella, play the theme song for him. So we'll have a lot going on. Scott, I'm going to end your night on a dour note.
Uh-oh.
Your boy Kobe Bryant left the Laker game with an ankle injury, out indefinitely.
Uh-oh.
Just when they were getting hot.
Yeah, they lost tonight. I saw that they lost by 4 to the Hawks after a big win. Well, not a big win over the Magic. Magic suck, but
Miami pulled a tight one over Philly to keep their streak alive.
Ugh, God, 20 in a row. They're not gonna. You know, I'm telling
they
you,
might not lose again.
I'm telling you, they may not. I'm telling you one thing right now. This spring, and we'll talk about it, you know, from time to time throughout the next 3 months. As exciting, in my opinion, and as fun as the Stanley Cup playoffs are going to be, is, in my opinion, how unbelievably dull the NBA playoffs are going to be.
Why? Because the Lakers aren't in it? There's a lot of good teams.
No, I think I don't think anyone's touching the Heat in the East. I think
I don't know. Indy could give them a little bit of
a run. I want to say Indy, but I want to say Indy, JR.
Boston.
The Pacers, but I don't. I just don't think they. I don't think they have the horses to win a 7-game series against them.
No, but they might. I mean, the West is going to be very interesting. San Antonio, Oklahoma City, the Clippers, a lot of good teams. Memphis is playing really well.
Yeah,
I think it'll be a fun playoffs. I think you're selling it a little bit short.
Yeah, I don't. I think the West is going to end up being chalk, and I think it's going to be the Spurs. I hate to say it.
Faces chalk. All right, let's get out of here. PTB Nation, have a great weekend, a great St. Patrick's Day weekend. Enjoy yourselves. Be safe. Be disease free as always. For Scott Griscolo, I am Justin Rosero. We'll talk to you Monday night. Doing some March Madness and brackets. Brackets heart.
Sorry about the Friars.
It's okay. I didn't really expect that much more than here.
Amen.
Let's hit Barbarella. Work out this angst.
Pope Berserker.